It's Thursday, February 1st, 2018, and welcome to episode 209 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Poulter.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And we have Brian Poulter back with us this time.
And just a reminder, if you're listening to this right away, you have one day to shop before Groundhog's Day. Get your Groundhog's Day shopping done tomorrow, February 2nd.
All right, I'll get right on that. So today we're going to talk a little bit about some of the new technologies and things that we've been experimenting with, and kind of how some augmented reality, virtual reality is evolving its way into consumer projects. Brian's a bicyclist, so he's going to share some of his cycling applications out there. It's really interesting, and just we'll have links in the show notes that you want to be sure to check out. And then for our tech picks,
I have a new mail client that want to consider to use on your cell phone, no matter what the format. If you give it a whirl, I think you'll like it better than the native application.
And I'm going to talk about a little bit about online video and how you can apply that in the classroom, and some new technology that you may be interested in learning more. So here we go. Back with us today is Brian Poulter, and today this is a brand new year, 2018, and we've actually kind of skipped a month a bit, so just consider this our January podcast.
It's my fault. We missed the month by one day.
Oh, well. So we've got plenty to talk about, plenty to share. Since we did have a podcast officially in January, I will mention another podcast that I'm working on, and I'll provide a link in the show notes. I'm not sure how much the word is getting around out there here at EIU. We have a new podcast called EIU Innovate, and it's by our graduate school. Dean Ryan Hendrickson is hosting that show, and I'm kind of helping with some of the behind the scenes. And I think we're on episode 6 now, so we've got 6 episodes of some innovative educators here at EIU, particularly related to the graduate school and some of their online programs, online degree programs. And we've had some really, really good shows and some interesting guests. The last one in January was by Dr. Chris Langen, and he is a geography professor here who happens to have a farming background, a rural background. And that's kind of his area of research, is kind of changes in the rural landscape. And we had a really good conversation with him. So I'll provide a link in the show notes. Be sure to check that out and back episodes. Again, especially for our EIU listeners here, I'm not sure how well it's been advertised across campus, and it's just kind of one of those things you happen across. And if you go to the EIU webpage, EIU.edu, and go to our graduate school, the links for the podcast is right off the grad school. So I'll throw that out there for our January edition. So, Brian, this time, I thought we'd talk a little bit. Here we are in February, new year. We've got some new challenges, some new technology for sure, and some changing formats and things. So what's kind of up in your world, and what are you thinking about?
Well, since we're in central Illinois, and it is not warm, and I'm a cyclist, as we've talked about before, I'm inside cycling. And it's amazing how technology seems to creep into areas where you didn't necessarily think it was going to creep.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And what we can learn from that. So I'm inside riding a bicycle trainer. And for those of you can't imagine what that is, it's basically just like a little device that lifts your back wheel. It spins a small, what would you call that?
Just a little wheel.
It's a 1-inch diameter wheel. And it creates resistance. And there's all the old ones would create the resistance by either you would turn on like a small little motor fighting hydraulic fluid or electrical or little turbine, wind turbine, which can get quite loud. But I just got one of the new ones. It's a smart trainer, and it plugs in, so it's electromagnetic resistance. But what is really interesting about it is it's a smart trainer. So I can, for example, take a bicycle course I ridden previously, program it in, and it creates the resistance as if I'm going up and down the actual course of the hills and all the other resistance factors. And what's even more fun than that is that there are now a number of services, online services. So this is, you can connect it a couple of different ways to your computer or to your iPhone or whatever electronic device you want, and you can ride virtually with or against other riders who are real people all over the world. So yeah. I was riding with someone from England yesterday, and You can draft people. It figures that out. And there's different courses. And as you go up these hills and down these hills, it gets harder and it gets easier. And there's also training programs.
Now, are the electronics built in? It can be completely standalone for the bike itself, for like these GPS coordinates and things? I mean...
Yeah, well, I'm getting my GPS. So if I'm talking about a previous ride I've done before, I'm using a Garmin system, but there are a bunch of different companies that make it's like a fitness watch for a bike is essentially what it is. So if you want to get actual rides, you can do that. Or if you're willing to put a little time, you can actually use free online software with topography and take that data and import it into these devices.
And that's where it adjusts the resistance. Whenever you go up a hill, it gets a little harder to pedal.
Right. Or if you're riding in this program called Zwift, Z-W-I-F-T, if I can spell today, it has courses built into it. And so I'm riding the streets of London, or you can look at Richmond, Virginia, and there's some other courses. And they also will sometimes put courses on there from actual, Tour de France type events, but different rides than that. And then you can also ride against other people, and it's showing you how fast they're going and how fast you're going. And when you set it up, you have the option to ride a 20-minute course, and it figures out your wattage. You measure output and wattage there. And so it will set a training program based upon your current level of fitness. Mm-hmm. And then...
Yeah, I kind of call that the gamification of that, where you set a goal, and then you try, every week to beat it.
And it's interesting to me because they call it a game, but when I look at it, I go, it's not, it's a game. And so the other thing I got to explain is you're riding along and people can wave to you and give you thumbs up and make comments.
Yeah, we'll provide a link in the show notes because this is kind of hard to explain, over an audio podcast. But I kind of compare it to like on Xbox, there's this Forza Racer and all the race cars and, going around the track.
Or a Wii maybe.
So realistic, whenever you say you see somebody going by, you're seeing a computer generated model of a biker, literally.
And
it's like a TV show.
It's their name and what country they're in. And it's what I've always imagined a real video game would be like, insofar as if you're playing, let's say you're a first-person shooter, when you get shot, it would hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'd be in some pain or you'd fall down and get hurt. You don't just jump and run around. Well, you're riding the bike. So if you're going up a hill, it hurts if you pick the wrong hill or if you decide to challenge yourself enough. And I could see, and it creates lots of data.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you could use it for education.
And I'll say turn it back to teaching and learning. There's all kinds of science lessons going through my head, or math or whatever.
I can certainly see somebody giving you a grant or some bike shop giving you this stuff. And I could see this in, Fiat or kinesiology, where these different people have these different parameters and plug it in and they can challenge themselves. And I think one of the problems sometimes with physical education training is that you train people to participate in groups, and sometimes you don't have a group, but this is something you can do on your own.
Well, it's that motivation factor, too.
Well, and I got to tell you that riding a trainer inside in the winter is the most boring thing you can do. I can do it for about a half hour before I go crazy, even when I'm watching movies. With the Zwift, I've ridden every single day for 2 weeks for an hour, and sometimes I got off, I was like, I wish that training program was longer, but I'm not in shape to ride longer than an hour. I'll kill myself. And some other things you learn from this technology. So when you're riding on this, you're on your bike, right? And so you don't necessarily have access to your keyboard. Well, there's an app for your cell phone so you can control it and wave to people and do U-turns and change your resistance on that. So you can change that into a control panel or your iPad. So this is being projected probably on your computer screen or your TV if you hook it up to your computer or whatever. You can actually have your little iPhone on your handlebar and watch it that way to see where you're going. Now, these trainers oftentimes use Bluetooth to talk to computers, so you don't have to hardwire them in. But they also use another format called ANT+ or ANT, and it's probably what if you're using a smartwatch and it's talking to your heart rate monitor or other. On my bike, I have a cadence thing which tells me how fast my pedals are going or how fast I'm spinning them. It can use that, and what that helps remind me of is sometimes as we use lots of technology, especially with Bluetooth, you can overwhelm your Bluetooth. You got too many things going on. Mm-hmm. So with this trainer that I have, which happens to be made by a company called Wahoo, but there's five or six different ones, and figure out which one you like better if you want one.
Mm-hmm.
It'll use Bluetooth or ANT+ or ANT+ as it's usually called. So I just run a long USB cable from my computer, and I have the little ANT antenna, which cost me $14, and I plug it into the end of that and put it right underneath the bike so that nothing else will interfere with it. And also because I run this, I choose to run it through my regular desktop computer. I have used it on my laptop and some other, my cell phone, but I prefer my Windows computer for this. It has more to do with the processing of the video card, so it looks a little better. It's hard to reach the keyboard. So I'll probably ask you to put this in the show notes, but one of the things I found was a little $14 wireless, now it's not Bluetooth, which I like, but this little dongle in, or this little USB interface antenna.
It's RF. Yeah,
half inch long. And I can control the keyboard, and it has a little trackpad built onto it, and it's exactly right. It's the size of an Xbox controller. Mm-hmm. And I just kept thinking to myself, why don't I take this into the classroom? Why do I have to be stuck? I can walk around the room. I can type. It works brilliantly. It has pretty good range. And because it's using its own wireless frequency and not related to Wi-Fi and not related to Bluetooth and ANT+, it's not causing any interference. They say the range is 30 feet. And I tested it, and I can get more than 30 feet.
Yeah.
And it's $14.
Yeah.
And I got the brightest lime green one I could find, so when I set it down, I can visually see where it is among all the clutter.
Yeah.
But if you want a black one or whatever color, you can get whatever you want. But when I saw that was available and figured it out, I was like, why haven't I mess with lots of technology as you do. And I'm like, why didn't I figure this out 10 years ago?
I might have to check out, because that might be one of my tech picks. I'm curious whenever I came up with that. But I've had that for quite a while. But then I also like the bigger full-size keyboards. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has its advantages for the portability. But like in a classroom, I like the Logitech makes a K400 model. It's been a former technology pick. And it has that nice trackpad on the side to move the mouse and things around. Advanced PowerPoint slides, or just, you know, click from one thing to the other. It gets you from behind the podium, which is, you know, the way our classrooms are set up. That's always a challenge, you know.
And the ability to walk around the classroom makes nothing else. You can see what everybody's doing or spot the mistakes they're making. But it also just walking around invigorates your classroom so much more than the sage on the stage format. One more thing about this little keyboard too, it has a rechargeable battery that you can take out, and happens to be the same one that Sony uses on their cameras. So it's
perfect for you.
Dirt cheap too. When you need to replace it, when the rechargeable battery ultimately fails after 5 years, you don't have to throw away the entire mechanism.
Yeah.
Which is always something I look for in every technology.
Yeah.
So it just gets you thinking different ways you can apply this technology, and how you can adapt that to your class.
The last show we did was in December, December 31st, last day of the year, and I'd mentioned talking a little bit. The show was about the Fourth Industrial Revolution, you know, and just how technology is really, really changing things, artificial intelligence, and how much that's changing. And then over Christmas, I had got a set of those VR goggles. So I'm kind of experimenting with that. And as in education, kind of known for jumping on a bandwagon. But what we're seeing is just as you described, and I don't know that you would describe, you know, this biking simulation type stuff as AR, augmented reality.
It just depends on how you choose to define it. But it certainly takes me, at least in my head, I feel like I'm outside of a 10 by 10 foot office. I'm riding a bike and I'm not bored.
Yeah. You know, everything's new, and the price point for the goggles have finally gotten affordable enough for, you know, for classroom use and some educational uses out there. And the one thing that I'm interested in, it's been around for a couple of years with the Vive and the Oculus Rift type things, but the problems with those systems, it required these little satellite towers, and you had to calibrate things and kind of cordon off your area. With the new Windows Mixed Reality, you literally just kind of trace out with your goggles, and you define like a 5 foot by 10 foot area. And that's for your protection. So you're, because whenever you put these goggles on,
you walk into the wall.
Yeah. But
or fall on the stairs.
But that's the difference. You know, we have AR, VR, and then what Microsoft is calling mixed reality. But augmented reality is what you kind of describe, because you're still aware of your surroundings. Augmented reality with HoloLens, you know, you have these goggles with a shade like sunglasses that you're still seeing the real environment. VR to me is a completely closed in system. It's taking you out of the world, virtual reality. And then MR is kind of, you know, gray area, kind of in between. But I am just absolutely amazed how far the technology's gone. I happened across my Twitter stream this morning, somebody had tweeted out something about the Commodore 64. It's like, I don't know, 36, 40 years old, whatever. But they're going to be making this little new mini game console is going to come out in March of this year. And I remember whenever I began teaching in the 80s, I bought one and put in the back of our high school classroom to teach kids programming back then. And, you know, from those very, very humble beginnings, you know, typing in basic code and things, writing our own games because, you know, we were creating the programs back then. There weren't all these apps and things. We had to make our own, to virtual reality. And then I think back into the 1990s up here at University of Illinois, they had the Cave, NCSA, virtual reality cave. Right. And I remember going up there and seeing a simulation of this wireframe fish swimming by me. And I thought that was just so cool that they had that. I got these goggles and put them on, and you can go out and watch YouTube 360-degree videos. They had like Shark Week. And I'm going to have to, you know, let you experience this. You've not seen them yet. But literally, you feel like you are a scuba diver under the ocean with these great white sharks. Literally, you turn your head, and it's like, oh, there's a shark right there. And what's fascinating to me, and this is just, you know, an area ripe for research, is the tricks that it plays on your human brain, and for good and for bad. I think there's going to be some psychological implications here. There's a game, it's called Plank, that you're like on this 100-story building and you walk this little 6-inch plank, and it changes your mind to think, oh, I'm 100 stories up, I have to be very careful. But you're walking on carpet, you know, but it literally tricks your mind, like just like a shark, you know, turn your head, you're quite frightened whenever you see that right in your face.
I just read an article talking about how, related to that, how the reason people get motion sickness, car sickness, flight sickness, is our bodies evolved to deal with us running and moving in space and being balanced. And when we're in a car, the motion of a car or an airplane or helicopter, surfing, whatever's making you seasick, or a ship making you seasick, is your body still, your brain still thinks in terms of walking, running, jumping. And what it's seeing is disagreeing with the way it interprets the world. When you're in an airplane, you're not running or jumping. And so it's that disagreement.
Yeah, I had that experience a couple months ago. I was parking in a parking spot between two things, and I pulled in, parked, put my foot on the brake, and then the two vehicles beside me started backing up.
That's always fun.
Yeah, and it's like, I've got my foot on the brake. Why am I still moving? It just completely tricked my mind. I mean, literally, it's like, wow, that was different.
Well, you know, just briefly going back to this bicycle thing for a second, Wahoo, the company that makes what I make, they actually make another mechanism, which I don't want, that you put on your front wheel, and as you climb a hill, it lifts the front of your bike at that angle,
Well, that's a simulation of the way it's going to change your leg muscles, for one.
There's professional cyclists using this. So, you know, they're riding at 10 grade, and you have to stand up on the bike to generate that power. You can't just pretend.
Yeah, that's the difference between training in the real world, too, because you could be, you know, the best indoor cyclist, and then you get in the Alps or whatever, Tour de France. It's like, oh, this is a little bit different.
And just for the record, if you're clumsy, you can still fall over on your bike inside.
And how do you know that?
Reaching for a light switch that was just a little too far, or the fan.
Yeah, but that's what I'm worried about with these experiences, because it gives you a false sense of safety on doing that. And I really, really worry about, you know, children that are still going through brain development and things. You know, what's that doing to the, you know, circuits inside your brain when you experience some of these unnatural things that you can do in a virtual world that are impossible in a physical world?
Well, think about it this way. 99.9% of us have grown up learning how to ride a bike on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
So when the bike's leaning, you know kind of what's going on. But let's say you sit and ride this bike for 3 months, and then you hop on a real bike for the first time. You know, you're going to assume you can do things you can't do.
Yeah. Well, here's another one, and I know plain as day that you can't do this, but in this virtual world, you have this concept called teleport. So you point somewhere, and you click, and you, like, suddenly jump 20 feet. You know, so you can. I'm finding myself in the real world thinking, boy, I wish I could teleport over there, you know, just doing that. And it's just like one click, and this really weird mixed reality thing. So I just threw out a little bit of cautionary flag there as all of these things develop. And again, particularly for children, and, you know, there's a lot of concerns with children and screen time and everything. So while it is a great wild frontier, I think we need to be careful as we march forward.
Just my final thought on the whole augmented reality, physicality, kinesiology thing. it does fight one of the problems we associate with screen time, which is you're just sitting there and your heart rate is in this and that. Here, you are the engine that drives the game. If you just sit there, nothing moves.
Yeah.
And so to the extent that they can develop things where you run or you jump, or, you know, I could see somebody a few years down have this huge, you know, paintball, but have a padded facility and let people run around. And
well, we were talking, you know, back to education, physics and things, and calculating wattage. The next step is throw a little electrical generator to power your TV or device or whatever. You know, it's just...
Oh, there are people... There's this website I found that's about hacking Swift, and these people that are doing things like that on their own, and it's only a matter of time before some Kickstarter campaign takes some of these and gets the money.
So this would, if I were teaching physics, this would be my challenge problem. It's like, okay, we have 30 of you in this class. How much wattage can you produce? And, you know, how long would that power this room in this school? I mean, there's all kinds of practical applications.
Take a Raspberry Pi computer, the generic sensors you get, and decide you're going to build some mechanism that measures something.
Yeah, and there's those watt meters to measure the power for refrigerators. Yeah,
and all kinds of things you could do to that.
So, you know, it's interesting as the technology's evolved, we're constantly looking for new applications, whether, you know, it's something of our personal interest or, you know, scientific, you know, science, technology, engineering, math type. There's just, you know, just worlds of opportunity out there. Brian's technology pick of the week is...
Well, I have to tell you that because I don't have the radio voice you did. I made you do the introduction there for me. It is a app called Edison Mail, and it's available for the Mac cell phones and all that sort of stuff, and Google Play Androids and all that sort of stuff. And it's just a better mail client than either cell phone manufacturers and systems provide. And what I like about it is... it's very fast, and it can access Google and, you know, all the formats of mail. But when your mail comes in, it goes, oh, there's an airline ticket. I'm putting this in your airline folder. You know, you can it has a PDF in it. I'm going to put it in this folder. It has a document. I'm putting it in this folder. And then that becomes searchable within the mail. If it has a PDF document, you can, when you search the mail, it will also search, I believe, the contents of the PDFs. It's just fast and it's efficient, and it can realize when their date's there and ask you if you want to put that in the calendar. And it's everybody who tries it, you know, you just use your mail client and you kind of get used to that it works, and you don't really consider whether or not there's something better. So something you can download, try, and if you don't like
it. So some type of, I mean, it's doing some artificial intelligence type, you know, making those decisions and things.
But it's really fast. It runs, for whatever reason, it runs faster than the native application. So a lot of people like it, and I'm starting to play with it. I don't want to go into it whole hog till I totally master it, because I get so habitually used to how I use it. But so far, I really like it.
Yeah. Well, and you're always wondering, it's like, what did it miss type thing, you know, something important out there. But, you know, there's also that kind of that privacy issue out there. You kind of wonder what's going on.
Well, I have to research it more, but I think this is all the artificial intelligence is taking place on your phone.
On local.
It's not, you know, and think about this too. If you're using Yahoo or Google Mail or whatever, your mail's already being read.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, my technology pick of the week is something brand new, I guess less than a year, a little over a year old, I guess. I've been doing a lot of work on developing this new pedagogy that we're calling onboarding or note streaming. Kind of the way that this is developed is a lot from the gaming community, because I don't know if you're aware of Twitch. Mm-hmm, you know, it's huge. I mean, huge gaming network out there, essentially like a TV station out there for gamers. And here in Illinois, esports and things, I mean, they've been a big thing, particularly over in Asia for some time. But it seems like that movement is really starting to move here to the States.
And the whole, you can get a scholarship for playing video games in college now, like an athletic scholarship.
Yeah, and the Illinois High School Association is considering having, you know, a competitive esports league. So gaming has always been, you know, innovative out there. They're always kind of on the forefront of some of these things. So there's a number of, I kind of almost like TV production like applications available out there that a lot of the gamers are using to stream, essentially making a, you know, their own little mini TV studio, you know, in the basement or wherever, you know, wherever they have their gaming set up. But another brand new technology It's called NDI, and it stands for Network Device Interface. And you'll be interested in this from a video perspective. Brian's a photographer. But, you know, everything else has gone digital. Video, it's very difficult to do. I mean, photography has gone largely digital. Mm-hmm. But video, because we're talking 60 frames per second, and it's just huge, huge file sizes. And then also on a network is latency issues, which is a big problem.
And as you know, when you work in production, audio and video sync is the
crucial
nightmare.
It's absolutely crucial.
If you want to know the most important thing about video, sound's more important. If your sound is horrible, video, nobody watches your video, and you got to sync it.
Yeah, that is so true. And it's just so disconcerting to see that lip sync out of sync. Yeah. But this NDI is a protocol out there that now allows for, like, I've been using these little cheap $50 webcams, and I can plug it in and essentially have two computers talk to each other with low latency. I won't say no latency, but I can get around that because I'm old school. I mean, I've been podcasting forever, so I've got an analog mixer over here. So I'm essentially going analog all the way up to the last point, because we have some other instructors here that I'm working with for some online education. So it's kind of like a tag team teaching situation. But now I have to worry about, you know, two streams of audio, and then whenever you flip a camera back and forth. So there's a lot of moving parts there. But we are having some really good success, and I'm really excited about. It's still on the frontier, but NDI was developed by NewTek. NewTek is the maker of the TriCaster. If you're in the video business, you probably have heard of the TriCaster. And if you're in the tech world, you probably know of Leo Laporte, who has this show out in California of, you know, probably 80 different shows out there. But he uses a TriCaster. He essentially has become his own TV station and studio all over. And he's used the TriCaster for years. But now then, with this advent, we're able to, and you need to check with your network engineers on that. And here at EIU, our network engineers have been great to work with. We're able to transport some of that video across. It has to be on the same subnet. Getting technical. Right. Sorry, I'm getting in the weeds. Right. But it's opening up a whole nether world of possibilities. And I'm just going to tie this, you know, I know I'm getting really deep into technology, but where does this apply? You're getting ready to, this summer, teach a 100% online course. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to start considering, okay, do I go the traditional route and, you know, using the LMS, a learning management system, here's the discussion board, read, you know, chapter one, we'll come back. Or now we do have the technical capability to do more of these switching style and more interactive type, even though it's still a one-way transmission, but there are ways. Another thing, you know, I'm always kidding Brian about walking before you run. you're ready to go to the next step, just like that trainer.
Or falling before you walk.
I'm going to take that incline. You know, we're going to go up to about 30 degrees now. But Microsoft Teams is a digital hub, and that may be of interest for you for this summer, because it's going to take a threaded conversation. And then also, if you download a local app, there is something called Meet Now, which is essentially a Skype call. But now then you can start having those two-way interactions or four-way interactions. I think maybe up to 25 on a call. But it kind of does that Brady Bunch screen, you know, when you get four people and then you start seeing people appear down below.
When you're talking about walking before you run, not to hijack what you're talking about, but I think you need to reemphasize, or I think I want to reemphasize what you said, which is you don't have to go all in on this stuff. And I know a teacher that teaches a class in, you know, the traditional now. In the traditional, here's the stuff, read the stuff, go to a post board and all that, but also has a certain period of the class where they're online, so students can log in and live real time and have a live conference and ask some questions. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's the problem with online teaching, is you don't have human interface. So even though they're doing the traditional route in terms of read, discuss, report back in some format, they also have, like, office hours, but they're video office hours,
right,
using something like this where four people can be listening.
Right.
One person asks the question, you know, 37 people have the question.
And, you know, that's the thing. You know, we have the face-to-face and the online, and then, of course, the blended in between. Their strengths and weaknesses for both. But then the challenge in the online environment is it's like, okay, Tuesday at 2 p.m., let's meet in this, you know, whatever. And then you have somebody from, you know, Saudi Arabia or somewhere on the other side of the world that, you know, you have to account for. So there's these challenges, but now we can literally, and it's so easy to create this, and it's your personal content. It's the subject matter that you know, you're making it, and then finally tie it together with a OneNote notebook to kind of provide that longevity out there for those notes. And since OneNote will embed Microsoft Stream or YouTube videos, it kind of makes that neat little package out there. So I've been experimenting a lot of new video technologies. As I said, NDI is really just hitting the video industry. I've not seen a lot of it in education, but I'm really excited about it. But there are, because it is so new, you will need to check with, you know, your network folks and things, because it will have an impact on a network, depending upon how big or small.
Yeah, taking down the network isn't.
Yeah, that's why.
Maybe a lot of fans.
Yeah, but those possibilities are out there, and real excited to get started. I'll be sharing some more with that. In fact, if you go out and check our ITC YouTube channel, I'll leave a link in the show notes and tell you a little bit more about the note streaming. So, thank you very much. That wraps it up for episode 209 of Tech Talk for Teachers. For show notes, please visit the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Poulter.
Keep on learning.